these top stories in the news at this hour. The Board of Education wants to wipe out most major contract benefits for the city's teachers. The United States vetoes the admission of both North and South Vietnam to the UN. Retail sales showed strong improvement last month. This is Lester Smith reporting. Next news as it happens. Next scheduled news at 11 o'clock over WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York. And now here's Gene Shepard.
Got to do something on the bicentennial tonight. I've decided to do it. This is going to be a very official broadcast tonight, and no, I'm just warning you, it's very official. And of course, you know, the bicentennial is appearing on every conceivable television. Every little half hour, you know, on comes some very ill at ease actor.
This is Richard Kudnick, and in 1822, this is the way it was.
And, you know, you're sitting, what the hell is all this about? And he goes on about how the frigate was sunk in the Bay of Penobscot, and the clam fishermen rose up. And so anyway, you know, it's kind of great to hear about all that stuff. But you only hear about the good guys winning. You notice that. They never say that there was another side to it. Oh, no. Well, there's only one side to history when you're celebrating. And, And so I'd like to take this opportunity at this point. Now, I'd have to, first of all, hasten to say, my good friends and neighbors and fellow victims of the 20th century, I would hasten to say that what follows does not necessarily, you notice I'm not totally denying it, what follows does not necessarily represent the views of any known human being, including the person that's doing it. Okay? Now, you notice what I said. Now, I left a loophole there big enough for a large Greyhound bus to drive through with a crowd of picnicking Baptist ladies aboard. All right? So, you like that image, don't you, Dave? Right, you know, throwing the chicken bones out the back. Okay. So, before we get in, this is a very serious program. So, before we do that, there is nothing more serious in bicentennial America than commerce. Commerce has supplanted the church in many areas. That is, if your union hasn't. Oh, yes. I mean, no, seriously. It used to be guys were Presbyterians, now they're Teamsters. And it's equally a union. And there's equal righteousness involved. And all the rest of it. Oh, yes. The true faith, that's called. So would you please hit the true faith button, please?
I'm Jane, and this is a no-frills commercial. Just straight talk and good news. Yes, no-frills is back, which means that now you can fly national and save a big 35%. Fly Me with No Frills.
Oh, starting September 3rd, you can fly No Frills fare to Miami-Fort Lauderdale for just $61. Little Jane sitting over there with No Frills. Little plain old Jane. That's a saving of $33. The number of No Frills seats is limited. It's every man against every other man. It's brother against brother. It's first come served. Yes, get in a fight. No Frills is back. Call your travel agent or National Airlines.
It's summertime once again, and a big question in everyone's mind is, what are the chances of being sunburned? This is Dr. Bob Harris, WOR Radio's resident meteorologist, and this is just one of the questions I answer in my daily weather forecast here over WOR Radio. I have developed a formula which informs you about the possibility of a sunburn, severe or not. You can hear my forecast during each and every newscast, heard hourly throughout the day and evening, as well as during the morning on Rambling with Gambling, here at WOR Radio, the talk of New York.
Okay, friends, the eagle has landed. That's right. Yes, that's the right one. That's Hitler cheering.
1943, the cheers for the Third Reich are fading memories. Bombs are falling on Berlin. All over Europe, the Germans are pulling back. Then Adolf Hitler personally orders an operation so daring it could alter the course of the war in one single stroke. Kidnap or kill Winston Churchill. Not since Day of the Jackal has there been a book with such tension, suspense, and high drama. The Eagle Has Landed by Jack Higgins weaves fact and fiction into a tingling thriller. In the air. On the sea. Up to Churchill's door they fought.
Explain to Rich what that means.
The paratrooper, the aristocratic English widow with a Nazi code name, the IRA gunman whose first mistake was falling in love. The Eagle Has Landed by Jack Higgins, the big thriller from Holt, Reinhardt, and Winston. The Eagle Has Landed, now at book and department stores.
Phone the European Health Spa.
Take me, shake me.
Phone the European Health Spa.
Take me, shake me.
Do it now.
Take me, shake me now.
There's a slimmer, more attractive body waiting for you at the European Health Spa. You know, the body you always should have had, with trim, toned muscularity, and a glow of good health. All it takes is a little exercise and watching your capital. We'll help you do it. So come on, give us the you that you are, and we'll give you the you that you can be. First trial visit free.
Okay, let's let it cool it there for a while there, huh? I mean, let them relax, you know. There's a thing they call, and did you know that in sales psychology, there's a thing they call the optimum saturation point. And that's a very technical phrase, meaning roughly that point at which you say, I can't stand it. Will you get another station? All right, that's what that means. How many times have you said that? I'll never be. I just wonder whether or not many television stations, and this one, I think they're the most guilty of this, are aware of the vast migration of viewers away after the 18th minute of consecutive commercials in the middle of a film. By the time you go back to the film, you've forgotten what film you were watching. You know, it gets back, you know, and halfway you start to dream off right in the middle of the bacon shake spot, you know, and then you start coming back a little bit in the Campbell soup commercial, and then you drift away again, you know, and then there's three spots on to visit Jamaica, and then two airline spots for you to visit peaceful Morocco, and then by the time you drift back into the thing, they come out with a station break and then repeat another 24 commercials. You know, there's a place for a used car dealer out in Queens where apparently they consistently auction off the best cars in the marketplace. And there's a guy tooting a horn and ringing a bell. And he says, and not only that, free cakes and coffee, you can come down the day before and inspect the car that you want to buy. Well, you know, you this brings you back a little bit. That commercial has a little life to it. And, you know, you like that big fat guy with the horny honks as another clunker was sold. And so suddenly you find yourself back in a film.
It takes you a couple of seconds. What happened to Gary Cooper? Somebody says, well, Gary Cooper, that was last night, Al. So I was walking Gary Cooper. He says, no, we were watching Alan Ladd. I swear it was Alan Ladd. I said, what are you talking about? Alan Ladd was on last Tuesday. This is already Friday. You know, and then Alan says, oh, what the hell? And you switch off and you watch a rerun of a wrestling match that was fought in 1938. you could tell it by the haircut of the referee. But 6-1 happened to the other. So, nevertheless, let's get back now. We've just played enough commercials for you, right? And when I begin to see you getting nervous, or at least you're softened up, I'll throw some more at you, so get ready for it. Yeah, get your snorkel ready there. Have you ever had a feeling that what you need is a metaphysical snorkel? You know what a snorkel is? That's right. Well, see, no, most people think of it as this tool that goes up. But the real snorkel, you know, is a German word. Most people think of it as, you know, it's a thing they install down at Grants, which you swim underwater with. It's a pipe, you know? No way. A true snorkel. Yeah, it was invented. It was a great secret weapon of Nazi, the Hitler world. Did you know that? Well, what it did, it was a very intricate device, not as simple as the one that you swim around in a swimming pool with, and it enabled a submarine. See, they put this thing up. It enabled a submarine to charge its batteries while lying under the surface of the water, undetected. See, that's the whole point. See, the problem with a submarine is that it's operated by batteries. See, they have these batteries that are diesel operated. This, of course, is a non-nuclear sub we're talking about, a conventional sub. So they have to charge the batteries. Now, the only way they can charge the batteries is coming up to the top, because this takes a lot of it makes a lot of fumes and stuff. They have a generator, you know, that operates, and the batteries are charging, and the thing it's charging away. And they're set so that in 12 hours of surface, they lay up at the top, they can fully charge the batteries, and then they can lie under the surface of the water. See, they operate on batteries, or did you know that, underwater? So at that point, you see, the invention of the snorkel was very important, because they could just, you know, this thing goes up. Now, it wasn't just a pipe that went up. That wouldn't work, because you can imagine, no, you say, why not? That sounds like, well, you put a pipe up in the air. Well, when you're laying and the surface, you're laying under the North Sea with 40-foot waves. I'll be damned if you're going to stick just a pipe up in the air. I'm going to tell you, that's the quickest way to know what's on the bottom of the ocean. You're going to hit the bottom awful quick and with a big thump. And so the snorkel was a very complex device and remains that. And now, wouldn't it be great to have a mental snorkel? We're undetected by your boss and friends around you. You could stick this tube up into the psychological atmosphere and absorb fresh air, which will not be easy to find in the stormy North Seas of your life. And the old thing goes up there and absorbs this fresh air, and you recharge your psychic batteries. Right? And then you could escape from your foes undetected, because that's what the battery enables you to do. They call it silent running. Did you know that that's a... You've heard that, of course. You've seen many of Clark Gable movies. You know all these things. And all the technicalities of submarines are totally known to all moviegoers. That's why a lot of people think there's nothing to a lot of things. Because the movies, of course, always oversimplify almost to a painful degree. So the average guy thinks that the average soldier is dumb because they don't show him learning anything. It's very simple. Why, the average walking around yuck would have trouble even loading an M1, much less firing it, taking it apart, cleaning it, and keeping it in operation. I mean, you know, just loading it would be enough to throw the average guy for a month. Just taking it off safety. I know one guy that thought, yeah, he got this gun for Christmas from his father. His father gave him a .22. And he was going to throw it away after a year and a half. He said, it doesn't work. I couldn't figure out how the hell the safety worked. All right, so, you know, don't push me, Dad. But nevertheless, is it time for the station break? Yes, of course. I know how it works. This is WOY New York. Right. And now let's lay him out now with the final blast. Hit him, quick.
Which high-potency vitamin do physicians and pharmacists recommend most? Theragran and Theragran M with minerals by Squibb. The name Squibb on the label means that you have no doubt about the honor or integrity of the maker. And right now you can take advantage of a great special offer. Buy 100 Theragran or Theragran M tablets at the regular price and get 30 extra tablets at no extra cost. 30 extra when you buy 100. That's a month's supply for one person, but the offer's limited. Get your Theragran by Squibb now. It's the brand physicians and pharmacists recommend most for mixed vitamin deficiencies, and it's available at Haler's Pharmacy, 546 Passaic Avenue in West Caldwell, Medical Center Pharmacy, 365 East Northfield Avenue, Livingston, New Jersey, Center Drug, 656 Bloomfield Avenue in Verona. And don't forget to tune in to this weekend's Jets football game, sponsored in part by your local Squibb Theragran pharmacist.
Sing it out, men. Sing loud and clear. I want to hear it coming from the heart. That's right.
Someday you'll own. Sooner or later, you'll own generals.
That sounds like John Mitchell singing number 121 in the great hymn book, right? Gee, I haven't heard John Mitchell in a long time. I wonder if he's still doing those funny little things and smoking it. Well, anyway, General Tire doesn't claim its tire experts have all the answers, of course. We're glad to hear it. They're modest, reliable, sober men. But they can tell you just about anything you want to know about tires. Narrow-minded, but they know it. So go down there and ask them about tires. Don't ask them about how to play pinochle. He doesn't know. Tires, yes. General Tire Specialist will handle all your automotive needs. And he'll even give you the words of this song so you can sing it on the way home. It comes printed up and he'll autograph it for you. LP with Tom O'Neill singing it. Sooner or later, you'll own generals. Let's see, we have two more, and then you're off the hook for tonight, and we can do the show.
Hello, I'm David Hartman. You know, we're all grateful when our children are healthy, and we sympathize with parents whose children aren't. Well, your youngsters can help children stricken by muscular dystrophy, especially when you encourage them. Send for a carnival kit. It shows youngsters how to hold a carnival right in your own backyard. The money raised will send children disabled by dystrophy to summer camp. Here's where to write.
Carnivals Against Dystrophy, P.O. Box 2000, Times Square Station, New York, or call 212-765-1725.
Okay. Now, do we have any more there?
Right.
Fly Aeromexico, the airline of Mexico to Mexico soon.
Aeromexico,
the airline that takes you to Mexico City and on to Acapulco on El Grande, our wide-body DC-10. Aeromexico is the only airline to offer you first-run movies as well as stereophonic music on your flight down to Mexico City. And to make your trip even better, Aeromexico has over 1,000 Aeromexico quality-approved tours to Mexico. There's bound to be one just for you. See your travel agent or call Aeromexico, the airline of Mexico, and fly with us soon.
All right, now we're all set to do a show, right? Enough fooling around. Bicentennial time. And the one thing you do not get, of course, watching all the bicentennial shows is that there is another story. Any great human conflict, and that's what the American Revolution was, any great human conflict has two opposing sides. And after the conflict, after the roaring and the shooting stops, the opposing side is hardly ever heard. I mean, right? So, just as a public service, I'm going to bring you what one group in the United States feels. Now, I'll have to do this in proper dialogue, accent, you know, give the proper emphasis. The thoughts do not represent the thoughts of the speaker, who rarely has any kind of thoughts of any type, because he learned years ago that this gets you nowhere. It's not thought you need as an agent. All right, here we go now. This was sent to me by one of my spies. It is a piece of mail which he received unsolicited in the U.S. mails, and presenting an entirely dissident, let's put it this way, opposing view of the bicentennial celebration. Would you please give me some proper theme music?
We shall fight them on the hedgerows. We shall fight them with blood, sweat, and tears.
Thank God they will know that there will always be an England. For the truth about the dastardly American Revolution brings you the following program. At last, the truth revealed. America, don't be deceived by bicentennial propaganda. Reunite now with England. As we approach the 200th anniversary of America's independence, we look with dismay and distress upon the many problems facing our country. The list is long and growing longer. We stop and ask, why? What is the cause? These innumerable crises are nothing less than the inevitable festering of a grievous mistake made 200 years ago, the American Revolution. The corruption in high places, the putrescence of our political institutions, the decay of our country's moral fiber, all originate in those self-serving and extremist acts of a few of our hot-headed, rebellious, so-called founding fathers. Their unwillingness to work within the system and their violent overthrow of the benevolent British rule. The sins of the founding fathers are now being visited upon the children. The only solution is that the corruption of the past mistake is to reunite with Mother England. Travel down the pothole tarmac of American history at a 65-mile-an-hour speed limit, and you will see that every corruption, every brutal and violent act, every injustice could have been prevented if only those radical and hot-headed men had been patient enough to work within the system. Slavery was abolished in the British Empire in 1807, 216 years before the Emancipation Proclamation. Hence, there would have been no Civil War, no Reconstruction period, no Ku Klux Klan. World Wars One and Two would never have occurred. Germany would never dare attack a British Empire that included both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. The American Revolution not only betrayed America, but also Blessed Mother England. Nay, the entire civilized world. Historians agree that the bloodbath of the French Revolution, and indeed the Russian and Chinese Communist Revolutions, look to the success of the American Revolution for their model. Can we honestly glorify men who have caused so much pain, so much grievous wrongs, and for whose mistakes we are today suffering? The loyalists were the real patriots. For over 200 years, we have been deceived and bullied into believing that violent, hot-headed men like Patrick Henry, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson were heroes. But the real heroes were the American loyalists, the Tories, who could see what terrible things the Revolution would cause. But how do our history books treat them? As traitors, despicable traitors. And how did our great heroes, those supposed lovers of liberty and justice for all men, treat those far-sighted men loyal to God and King and Mother England? They confiscated Tory property, drove them into exile, and barred and tarred and feathered them, threw them into prisons without trials. Do we hear any of this from our biased bicentennial commission? Of course not. They are covering up, just like the Watergate scandals, covering up the evils that were visited upon the whole world by that dastardly American Revolution, which brought upon us the Chinese Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, all the bad things in all of history ever since that time was brought about by Patrick Henry. Give me liberty of giving me truth. Indeed, the truth is that Mother England remains like a rock of civilization. Yes, let us correct that dastardly mistake of history that was made 200 years ago by reuniting with glorious England, once again rejoining our Queen and celebrating God and country by singing God Save the Queen. Instead of that ridiculous song of rebellion, America the Beautiful, potholes, litter bugs everywhere. Yes, America the Beautiful, a song of revolution. And I say to you, them and all school children sing, God save the Queen. And the Union Jack floats over Indianapolis. Only then will civilization restore itself to the American public. This program was brought to you by the True Patriots and Right Thinkers of America Committee ad hoc.
Exciting, wasn't it? Never thought of it that way, did you? I mean, the whole damn world collapsed. I mean, you know. Right. Holy smokes. Look, well, yeah, a tree. Wow. So much for 4th of July, I'll tell you. Well, now, that you think I'm making this up? There it is. This is going into my archives here, friends. Vast file of trivia so that people of the year 5,970 will know exactly what it was like. This was a view. And he says it just came in the mail. He said it came with an ad from Beneficial Finance, two bills from the light company. The phone company was sending him a friendly little note. And he says he read this one last. He said, by God, he halfway believed it after all those notes from IT&T. You know, oh yeah, there are very many extremes of turning back the clockism. You know, if you really carry that thinking back to its extremity, all the way back, you can become. You got that theme up there? All right, okay, all right.
The committee to restore stability among the solar systems of measure now brings you the following program. We are tired of this so-called celebration of man, which goes on incessantly. Do you realize that World's War I, World's War II, the American Revolution, the Chinese Revolution, Attila the Hun, Alexander the Great, the stabbing of Julius Caesar in the marketplace, all of these evil, dastardly deeds would have been prevented if Adam had not known Eve in the Garden of Eden. But who is responsible for that? Who created the whole mess? That is correct. That which some wrong-headed people continue to worship. God, the ultimate enemy of us all, is God, because had he not created Adam, he would not have created the original sin. And had he not created the original sin, there could conceivably have been no, at any point, human misery and unhappiness which have succeeded generation after generation. So we demand a turn back to the clock before there were even men at all. And so the committee to alleviate the wrongs of nature and the solar system demand a return to the original scheme of things before man was created.
All right, just bring it in. Don't worry about it. That's fine. With these committees, it really doesn't matter whether the music comes or goes. The blathering will go on. But see, you can rewrite any kind of history you want. You can prove conclusively that had not President Kennedy got elected in 1960, there couldn't have been an assassination. You know, it's that kind of thinking. It's blaming all the wrongs. It's a fascinating thing on how you can blame all the evil of mankind on one single thing. This, of course, does not admit to any human propensity for evil at all times. I mean, under any circumstance, and under any flag. But this is actually if you think I'm kidding, a lot of people are, you know, probably saying, oh, that was really funny and all. But it is funny in its way, but I think certainly inadvertently. And this was mailed and sent to a friend of mine, one of our spies out there in the darkness, who received it. And curiously enough, it was mailed from the Brotherly Love City. Well, that's symbolic. Of course, this is where that whole dastardly rotten stuff began. Why not? I mean, if you're going to write out the, you know, if you're going to sit down and write the stuff about the decay of American political systems, you should certainly have a Watergate address. I mean, well, it's symbolic. I mean, of course. And I read that thing and I said, well, you know, there are people who, there are royalists among us. You know, the royalist contingent has never left America. It has always persisted and, in fact, was present at the time of the Revolution. Who was among the people of the great founding fathers who was the leading royalist, who believed not in the British royalty, but in establishing an American royalty? Who? Patrick Henry? Who? Well, he was not a leader in that field. He leaned towards it. But who was the leader? There, Madison? Well, no. Brack. Who was it? Well, it was Alexander Hamilton. And in fact, Hamilton, at one point in time, to use another government phrase, suggested that Mr. Washington be the king. And he wanted him to be a hereditary king, not just a king, you know, while he's around, but a hereditary king, so that we could be, right now, if it was carried through, we could be ruled by the George Washington family. There are descendants, you know, of Washington around. And we would have that scene going. Now, that curious kind of thought has never left the country. In other words, there's always been a small group of royalists. And I'm not talking about economic royalists or a caste royalist. Yeah, that's true. Gerald Washington. He would be Gerald the Eighth. Or, you know, some name like that. Of course, the thing about royalty, of course, is people who are royalists, you know, who go for this idea of royalty, always consider themselves part of the aristocracy. That's important to realize, that all advocates of the royal system invariably think of themselves as part of the aristocracy of that royalty, of that system. So you'll find people who are always constantly projecting that America, that, say, for example, New York should be a separate country. They see the country then being governed by them and their friends. This is invariable the way it is. It's only right. I mean, so this is the problem that always faces guys who want to establish a new country. Every time you want to establish a new country or a new form of government, you always see it ruled by yourself or the people who think like you do. And so it presents a great problem. But the old royalist idea has always persisted. This is a deep human, again, it's a human, one of the human fallacies, the belief that somehow if you have a king, he's above politics. Whereas, as a matter of fact, some of the most corrupt politicians of all history were kings. But there is always this belief that that aristocratic concepts always put the person above the crass things of now. As a matter of fact, many a king has gotten into trouble because he demanded unbelievably high tariffs to be paid to him, which is, in a sense, he just came right out and said, look, I ain't not going to mess around with a graft. You just pay. And they did. And so ultimately they blew the lid off of that whole concept because it eventually decays into figureheadism, at which point then you have what they call popinjays then come into the field, and they lead the country, and the king is the figurehead. But if you have a real king, in other words, a king that actually does rule, then that's just another name for a dictator. But it's a dictator, you see, with a difference. And what is the difference? Well, he is always invariably considered, if a king is involved, he is considered to be somehow that way by birth and by right. That's called the royal right of succession. He's not just a tough guy that came in and took over, like Hitler. It's royal right. And so it's very hard, much harder to mount a revolution against a king than it is, say, against a dictator. Because the dictator, usually just another guy like you, and he got a lot of guns together and a bunch of his buddies, and they blew up the city hall. And there's nobody that says he's divine. Although, it's interesting to note that many a dictator has assumed divinity later. They begin to deify themselves. Now, for example, in communist China today, Mao Zedong has attained semi-deity status. And he is almost, he's a god, a godlike creature. And at the point where any mere mortal crossing swords with a Mao, or, say, crossing swords with a member of that kind of concept, is not crossing swords with another man, but a divinely inspired creature. And that's madness in itself. It's like arguing with Buddha. It doesn't work. the whole idea of king and I suppose you can say the divinely inspired leader has always been part of the fallacy of mankind, and we've always gone back to it ultimately, curiously enough. That's why dictatorships continue to arise. They seem at the time to be the right thing. The people get swept away. You heard that cheer of the eagle has landed, that little commercial. Well, that was millions of people cheering a guy, which they thought at that time, by the way, had curious, he was a super divinity almost. And in fact, the Hitler, a lot of people don't realize that during Hitler's reign in Germany, that everything was done to make Hitler appear to be beyond the mortal failings of human beings. For example, he made great efforts not to ever get married. He doesn't have anything to do with women. He made a big thing about he was always afraid that he would gain any weight. Did you know that Hitler was extremely nervous about gaining weight, because that would be somehow human? He would be a human person. It shows that he likes to have Fig Newtons late at night and sit around and have a little beer with the boys. So he was always afraid of gaining weight. And they had movies made. There's a famous movie director, for example, that made a great movie. It was a great technical movie. It was a tour de force of direction. And it's a powerful thing. What's the name of the movie? You studied a little media. What is it? You don't know the name of the movie. Well, it was called The Triumph of the Will. And it's a movie that was shown throughout Germany back in the, right shortly after Hitler came into power, during, around the time of the 36 Olympics. It's historically true. And this movie was just absolutely compelled. People had to go see it, and it was shown in the movie houses. And it was a tremendous success. And the opening of the movie literally shows Hitler descending from the heavens. Yes, he does, in a great flash of light. And he really, what he does actually is arrive in a J-52, if you're interested in what it was. It was a Lufthansa transporter of the period, later a bomber, a J-52, it's a Junkers, JU-52, and he comes out of the sun, and you just see Hitler literally descending. It's fantastic scenes, and millions of people, and he walks a solitary figure among great banks of thousands of torch-bearing people. It's just unbelievably dramatic, and so it all based on the concept of a deity concept. A deity does not walk with the crowds at any point. So Hitler was rarely ever seen walking in a group of people. He was always a lone figure, walking down a vast. You've seen those movies, walking down a vast aisle of assembled multitudes, mankind, and he ascends to this high platform. Whenever he spoke at great high heights, high above the audience, looking down, and lights. The lights were fantastic on him. You know who designed all those lights? I bet you're curious who was responsible for the design of all that stuff. There was a man who designed the panoply at the famous Nazi party conclaves they had. Say, every year they had a great party conclave in Nuremberg, which all the stops were pulled out. I mean, everything. You've seen them in the movies. You've seen movies of those things with the searchlights and all this stuff. Well, there was his architect, Albert Speer, designed this stuff, and he had a very interesting idea for this the first big Nazi party they had, that they took giant searchlights, like hundreds of them. It was a fantastic sight from the, I've seen movies of it. And they took giant searchlights, like really hundreds of them. I mean, really powerful searchlights. I'm talking about the kind, anti-aircraft searchlights, the kind with an enormous beam. And they put them in a giant ring around the stadium, pointed directly upwards. So that when this thing opened, it looked like in the sky, there was an enormous wall of light. It was like giant pillars that extended to infinity. Very carefully spaced. And just at the time when Hitler was to appear, they had fly right through this beam. They had a flight, V-shaped flight of Stukas. Just went whoosh, right through this thing, screaming as they went through it, you see. Oh, wow. The people flipped. I mean, it was unbelievable sights. And this is part of that idea of making a person into a deity, a natural divine ruler, that anyone who could bring about this kind of fantastic wonderment has to be divine. He doesn't show up in a Sears Roebuck suit. That's, by the way, one of the reasons why almost all dictators appear in magnificent uniforms, because it sets them apart from the walking around guy. The walking around guy, of course, he wears his T-shirt and he goes out and gets his stretch suit. When you see, for example, scenes of Stalin, he has, this is all part of the panoply. Napoleon, for example, had great uniforms designed for himself. And he made sure that this was so. So, everything was very, very dramatic. And he was even more than a king. Of course, he declared himself an emperor, which is... goes even back before kingship. Emperor means an empire, whereas a king means just one little country like Patagonia. But an emperor, that's something else. That's the biggie. That's a big time. That's like Caesar, the Roman Empire, and all the rest of it. So the imperial connotations, panoply, are very evident when you look at say the procession of a leading dignitary from, say, a great Iron Curtain country. When he arrives, he arrives wearing a tremendous uniform, usually. He arrives with a color guard, a tremendous color guard, a Praetorian guard standing at attention, usually a very specially selected group of soldiers, all specially uniformed, which, by the way, was another thing that Hitler did. He had great uniforms for the palace guard, which, incidentally, in essence, was the SS. But within the SS, there was a nucleus called Hitler's Guards, the Führer Guard. And they were like the cream of the cream. And, they had uniforms that even to this day glow in the dark, if you run across one of them. But, those uniforms and all that stuff, people are studying that. You can actually buy now books where all the Nazi regalia is all... carefully analyzed. Schutzstaffel SS Hauptführer, second class, with the Order of Romania and the Great Star of Bulgaria with diamond cross leaf oaks. Wow. This is WOR New York. Stay tuned for In Conversation.